What does it mean when the granddaughter of a housekeeper who never finished grade school sits on the highest court in the land? In 2022, this question moved from hypothetical to historical fact. Ketanji Brown Jackson's ascent to the Supreme Court wasn't just a personal triumph. It was the culmination of dreams deferred across generations. Her memoir reveals something profound. The distance from segregation to the Supreme Court can be traversed in a single generation, but only when that generation stands on the shoulders of those who came before. Her grandparents organized geography contests with National Geographic magazines in segregated Miami, determined their children would access opportunities forever denied to them. They couldn't have imagined that their granddaughter would one day interpret the Constitution. Yet every sacrifice they made laid another stone in the path she would walk. When Ketanji was born in 1970, her parents made a deliberate choice that would shape her identity. They reached out to relatives in Liberia to find an African name, landing on Ketanji Onika, meaning lovely one in Swahili. This wasn't just about honoring heritage, it was an act of resistance against centuries of erasure. But that beautiful name became a daily reminder of difference. Teachers stumbled over its pronunciation, their discomfort visible. She offered K as a compromise, learning early the exhausting dance of making others comfortable with your existence. Her parents never let her forget that her opportunities came with responsibility. When she laughed at her grandmother's misspelled note about a broken faucet, her mother's face fell with pain and anger. The sharp rebuke that followed became a defining lesson. Educational privilege doesn't confer superiority. Her grandmother, who couldn't finish grade school because of segregation, possessed wisdom that transcended formal education. That afternoon spent crying and then apologizing taught her something Harvard never could, that grace and intelligence wear many faces, and judging others by narrow standards reveals more about our own limitations than theirs. At 7, Ketanji slipped underwater at a teacher's barbecue, the Motown music drowning out her cries. Her mother's instinctive glance saved her life. But what happened next mattered more. Rather than coddling their frightened daughter, her parents refused to let fear limit her. When she complained about difficult tasks, her mother would ask calmly, "Can this be done, Ketanji? Have you seen other people do it?" The answer was always yes. "Well, if it is possible for a person to do this thing, then you can do it too." Shortly after, her mother entered her in a public speaking competition. They worked on Margaret Walker's For My People, a poem about Black Americans' struggles and triumphs. Standing on that stage, she surprised everyone with her robust delivery, winning first place and a special purple rosette. That night, she connected her success to her near drowning and made a promise. Never again would she let fear shut her down. Even if afraid, she would swim. This determination carried her through high school debate under legendary coach Fran Berger at Palmetto Senior High. Despite their political differences, Berger was arch-conservative while Ketanji delivered liberal speeches, the white teacher became a fierce champion of her Black students' talent. This unlikely partnership revealed something important. Excellence transcends ideology, and great mentors recognize potential regardless of whether it mirrors their own beliefs. Ketanji deliberately chose to perform African American stories in competitions, recognizing their absence. Her interpretation of the Atlanta child murders, weaving together poems by Nikki Giovanni and Ntozake Shange, left audiences in profound silence at Emory University's national tournament. Her performance of August Wilson's Fences won first at Harvard's competition, where she walked the hallways imagining her future.
Sunset Elementary's gifted program meant academic success while navigating being one of few Black children in advanced classes. W.E.B. Du Bois called this double consciousness, the exhausting sense of always viewing yourself through others' eyes. She found refuge in a secluded courtyard she named Circle Square, where she could read without that burden. But her deepest belonging came Sunday mornings at Bethel Apostolic Temple with her grandmother, where her sense of being other melted away in that sweltering sanctuary filled with hymns about perseverance. Her parents surrounded her with African art and books reflecting Black American experiences, emphasizing she wasn't more special than other children. She had simply received opportunities many hadn't. She learned to move between worlds, code-switching effortlessly while never losing sight of who she was. At age 7, Tommy tearfully said his mother forbade him from playing with her because she was too different. This rejection hurt deeply, but she refused to let someone else's unjust evaluation define her. These lessons in resilience would prove essential, facing Senate confirmation hearings and every moment when voices whispered she didn't belong. Harvard brought crushing homesickness and imposter syndrome. One evening in Harvard Yard, a Black woman whispered, "Persevere," an encounter that felt like divine intervention. On her 18th birthday, alone on Widener Library steps at her lowest point, she resolved not to quit. Her salvation came through sisterhood with three Black women, Lisa, Nina, and Antoinette. As roommates in Cabot House, they forged lifelong bonds. Antoinette even predicted DeConte would someday sit on the Supreme Court. When someone displayed a Confederate flag in their dorm, they remembered Toni Morrison's warning that racism functions as distraction. They balanced activism with academic excellence, refusing to let hate derail their purpose. She also met Patrick Jackson, whose world differed utterly from hers. A seventh-generation Harvard student from Boston Brahmin stock, his family traced back to British royalty and the Mayflower. Her ancestors' names barely appeared in records until after the Civil War. Yet Patrick's down-to-earth nature and social justice commitment surprised her. Their October 12, 1996 wedding joyfully merged two worlds. At the reception, she treasured seeing Patrick's grandfather, Covington Hardy, a former bank president, conversing with her grandmother, Queen Anderson, a former housekeeper who never attended college. On the dance floor, her college roommates taught Patrick's family the electric slide, bringing together communities who might never have crossed paths without their love. Ketanji's first daughter, Talia, born in January 2001, was a sensitive infant with specific needs. When teachers made dismissive comments about Talia being a little bit off, Ketanji wondered if race was a factor. Talia was the only Black child in her class. After Talia's first seizure, she was diagnosed with complex partial seizures, a form of childhood epilepsy. Comprehensive testing later confirmed mild autism spectrum disorder. Though initially devastating, the diagnosis brought relief and clarity. When Ketanji was being considered for the Supreme Court, Talia expressed full support. "I really don't mind the world knowing that I'm autistic. So what? It's just who I am." Her wisdom reflected a profound truth. Autism isn't an illness. It's a different way of being human. This journey taught Ketanji about acceptance, advocacy, and the courage required to parent a child whose needs challenge society's narrow definitions of normal. When Justice Scalia died in 2016, Ketanji's younger daughter, Layla, learned Supreme Court justices are nominated and immediately wrote President Obama. She praised her mother as determined, honest, and never breaks a promise, insisting she would make a great Supreme Court justice. The letter reached the White House, and Ketanji's name appeared on the president's shortlist a week later. 6 years later, when Justice Breyer retired, President Biden could fulfill his promise to appoint the first Black woman justice. When Ketanji expressed concern about the scrutiny ahead, Layla was resolute. "You have to do this, Mom. I would feel like the most selfish person in the world if I denied our country the possibility of you serving." During confirmation hearings, a viral photo captured Layla gazing at her mother with admiration. Senator Cory Booker provided a powerful moment. "You have earned this spot. You are worthy. You are a great American." On April 7, 2022, the Senate confirmed Jackson 53-47 as the 116th Supreme Court Justice. In her self-lawn speech, she declared, "In my family, it took just one generation to go from segregation to the Supreme Court." At her investiture, she honored Judge Constance Baker Motley, her North Star, concluding, "I have a seat at the table now, and I'm ready to work." Today, Jackson walks marble corridors where few African Americans have tread, her chambers adorned with paintings by Black artists, a court first. Like the statement necklaces she layers over her robe, the art symbolizes hope and change. She's been blessed with capacity for hard work, passion for performance, ways to replenish her spirit, faith, family, friends, the privilege of defending the Constitution, and art. A lovely life in service to justice. In that service, she honors every ancestor who couldn't finish school, every grandmother who cleaned houses, every parent who sacrificed, and every child who will now see themselves reflected in the highest court. Her journey from that 7-year-old girl slipping underwater to Supreme Court justice proves what her mother always knew. If it's possible for someone, she can do it too. The promise she made after winning the speech competition, to never let fear shut her down when faced with the deep end, has been kept in the most extraordinary way imaginable.